Hi, this is Jamie Denny from Path from No Return, and you're listening to Juicebox Music Podcast. Oh.
Hello and welcome to Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter McClamrock, and with me on the other line, as always, he never dreams, Nick Moreau. How's it going, Nick?
Good. What? I don't dream?
Come on. Apparently not. That's what I heard this week.
Oh, man. Fake news.
Well, we're here. It's another late night edition of Juice Box. We're recording this late in the evening, making sure we give everybody the content that they so demand. We got a fun show today. Two reviews up for you guys. Kind of a light news week, don't you think, Nick?
Yeah. It was not really easy to find big, juicy news articles to talk about.
Yeah, it's just the doldrums of this early spring, late winter. Everybody's focused on college basketball.
Do people even watch this anymore?
To watch college basketball? Are you kidding me? See UMBC just knock number one seeded Virginia out of the whole tournament? It was incredible.
That's what I mean. With all the losses, do people even watch anymore?
You know what I mean? Well, yeah, at this point, I think we still got it. There's still Duke. Maybe there's one number one seed left. I don't know. We learned from the last episode that people really tune in to hear our takes on basketball. So we're going to keep that coming for you today. Blazers losing to the Rockets. I hope that's okay with you, Nick.
It's only been an hour, man.
Hey, the Clippers have been, they're on the outside of the playoffs looking in, but I don't think this is their year.
Nope.
So, the most interesting piece of news, I think, this week involves everyone's favorite pop star, Rihanna.
Yeah.
So she reacted to an advertisement on Snapchat this earlier this week. Snapchat posted an advertisement saying, who would you rather hit, Chris Brown or Rihanna? Hmm. Now, obviously, this is in poor taste. Rihanna responded accordingly, telling people to, you know, stop using Snapchat. And subsequently, Snapchat's value on the markets went down to the tune of almost $1 billion.
Whew.
I don't know if I've ever seen a musician or a pop star or really an entertainment figure at all have so much impact financially on a company before. Have you?
No, but this is a lesson for all tech companies. There's two people you don't mess with in the world, Beyonce and Rihanna.
Yeah, I was going to say, who really would have that much influence? I, as far as I know, Rihanna seems to have like 100% approval rating.
Yeah, I mean, she should run for office.
Do they still test for marijuana when you enter the head office of the White House? I don't think they do. Something tells me they're not drug testing our current president.
I guess, well, that's another topic, but I guess she can't run, right? She wasn't born in the U.S., am I right?
That's true. Barbados born. Mm-hmm. Bono never got that changed, so Schwarzenegger never got that changed. I guess, maybe she'd be the one to make it happen.
If there's one person that can do it, it's her.
Thank God you're never going to get to run for office now.
I know.
But I don't even understand what was going on with this ad on Snapchat. Obviously, there's a history of domestic violence with the relationship between Chris Brown and Rihanna. And in fact, Chris Brown and whoever it seems to be.
Yeah.
But this was an ad that it was like, would you rather, you know, like that old game, would you rather? And it's in such poor taste. Even the CEO of Snapchat's personal net worth went down $150 million.
Oh my God. I'd be mad losing $100. I can't imagine if she lost $150 million.
Hey. Yeah, exactly. Who's gonna choose? They would hitting Rihanna over Chris Brown.
And this is so stupid. Like, why? I don't understand. But what was the upside? What was the goal of this advertising?
That's what I was wondering too. I mean, it's listed as an ad, but I don't exactly know what the product, like what they're trying to sell with this.
I mean, not only that, like, I mean, we live in the climate right now where it's so tone deaf. Like, just joking about domestic violence is so tone deaf.
I mean, 100%. And you know, Snapchat immediately apologized and said that it was in poor taste and it should never have been run. But it wasn't until Rihanna complained about it that they got that result.
Yeah, until they lost $750 million.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not exactly ringing true, their apology, you know, like if she has to come out there and say something about it.
Yeah.
But what does that say about her in terms of, you know, our, like, the pop stars that we look at as important? I don't even know if Beyonce saying something like that would have this effect.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess the only way to know is to mess with her, and I wouldn't do that. Yeah. To me, it shows that Rihanna is, like, her following and her fans are just so devoted. I mean, not that you have to be a devoted fan to obviously defend the poor taste that Snapchat portrayed, but, you know, from what I know about Rihanna's fans is that they're really devoted. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if companies are just knocking at the door to have Rihanna endorse anything right now.
Yeah. Well, she has a deal with Puma. I know Fenty and Puma. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it seems like she's fairly, discerning with the things that she chooses to, you know, give her likeness or her name to.
Yeah. Good for her. I mean, I think that's good.
But it's definitely, it's worth going and checking out her Instagram story where she posted about this Snapchat ad and urged people to kind of stop using it because it shows the power of social media, the power of celebrity in the age we're in, and there's an immediate backlash to things. Now, I think backlash is good in a case like this because there is no way to spin this that it was in good taste at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's really a big lesson to be learned, I think, from these companies. And I am very glad I haven't invested in Snapchat, as some of my friends told me I should in the last year or so.
Yeah, it's probably a wise decision, I would say.
Yeah. And yet again, not a good look for Chris Brown, reminded of his past in a negative way, if there's anything but negative. So,
yeah, I can't, you know, to be honest, I can't even with Chris Brown. So
what's your favorite Chris Brown song?
I don't have one. To be honest, like I think the last Chris Brown song I listened to was in college, and this was pre the Rihanna scandal. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like it then. And I don't think I ever wanted to listen to him again. And then all this stuff happened, and I for sure don't really want to listen to him. I kind of have a problem with people that will still go to his shows and listen to him. I don't get it.
Yeah, I have a long history of going to R. Kelly shows and buying his records, and at some point that kind of had to stop, you know. And it's an embarrassing chapter, even though I think he's a genius musician. You know, at some point it's like you can't keep giving people money and supporting people that are just completely amoral.
Yeah, exactly.
It has nothing to do with their music, and that's another debate for another time. But you know, I like, there's a couple Chris Brown songs I like, Look at Me Now, but mostly because Busta Rhymes is on that song.
La 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 la. All right.
It's just fair to say that we are on Rihanna's side with this, and you know, good fair play to her. Who uses Snapchat anyway? I guess 12-year-olds. I don't know.
I think it's slowly dying. Now we've become this is the Juicebox Tech Podcast. Ever since Instagram started stories, I think they just stole everything Snapchat had going for them.
Well, I'm lazy, so I just like to have the one app, and you know, I don't need to go over to Snapchat to see people's moving image posts. I'll just stick to Instagram, like you said.
Yep.
Oh, well, a few interesting tours announced in the last week. We were talking about Beyonce earlier. She and her husband, Jay-Z, have announced a second installment of the On the Run tour. Apparently, there's an album coming along with this one, a collaborative album between the two of them. So they had Beyonce put out Lemonade. Jay-Z had his 444 album, giving his side of the infidelity saga that has been going on with the two of them. And now they're going to join forces, almost like it was a plan, Nick.
Oh, my God.
Almost like they had thought this whole thing through.
What a coincidence.
What a coincidence. And a stadium-filling tour. They've got two dates here at the Rose Bowl in L.A. They're playing stadiums across the country. I don't know. I think this there might be a few tickets sold to this thing.
I don't think they're going to make any money.
Yeah, probably a loss leader, right? They
They haven't learned anything from this Fashion Pumpkins.
I heard the tickets are going to be priced reasonably. I heard, you know, like Pearl Jam in the 90s, nothing over $25.
Oh, is that so?
I will say I did go to the On the Run tour the first time around. I love Beyonce. It was the only time I've ever seen her live. And honestly, wished it was only Beyonce performing. I mean, Jay-Z's okay, but he's no Beyonce.
Right, exactly.
So, I don't know. What do you think this album will be like? Something tells me, I don't like to prejudge things. Yes, I do. But something tells me it's not going to be the best work for either of them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the risk, right? It's just so high profile, but it's just going to be a printing money facility.
Basically.
Yeah. So kudos to them.
And they've got two young kids. I mean, you knew that she's playing Coachella next month. Mm. She wasn't just going to do one-off shows, I'm sure. And there'll probably be some of their new music previewed on this tour, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an exciting moment to be a Beyonce fan.
Exciting, very exciting, especially if you like her and Jay-Z together. Any other tours that passed by your desk that you thought looked interesting?
I think there were a few. I thought was interesting is Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile are announcing tours.
Not together, though.
Right, which I thought was cool. And it feels like it's really soon after their tour together.
Yeah, she's got a new record coming out, and I'm really looking forward to it. I just saw that she's, you know, performing in L.A. at the Greek Theater, which is, you know, a venue that is almost 10,000 in capacity. And on her last album, I saw her at the Roxy, which is about 500 capacity. So a lot has changed. You know, her last record really set her off in the stratosphere, and I think that's really awesome. I think she's great and somebody I'm really happy that is very successful.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's great. I really liked her last record, so I'm excited for that.
What about this Block Party Silent Alarm anniversary tour? Now, this is, you know, this is something that you could have expected. Block Party, there's only two of the four original members remaining in the band. But were you a fan of that album when it came out?
For sure.
What year? Is it 10 years? So 2008? No. Is it?
Oh, yeah.
No, it can't be the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, because they were doing that festival run in 2009, so I think you're right. Because remember, they were the band on before Oasis, before that debacle in Paris.
Oh, they were the support band in that?
Yeah. At the festival, they were the band slated before them.
No, it's the 15th, I think. Wow,
15th.
No, 2005. Honestly, it's 13 years. I don't know what they're doing with this tour. I think they're just trying to make money. there's at least not a round number to a lot for them on this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. Block Party. They're entering we're playing that album live stage of their career.
Exactly. And so many bands get that distinction these days. It just seems like a good excuse for them to get to play larger rooms than they would be playing supporting an album of new material.
Yeah.
That album holds up pretty well. I listened to it, I don't know, sometime in the past year. It's the only Block Party album that I really know at all, but it does hold up well, and I don't think I'll be hitting up that tour unless I get hooked up, but I wouldn't mind it.
Yeah, no, it's true.
One tour that I probably will be checking out, they're really advertising it as almost a co-headlining tour, which I thought was funny, but only a few dates in the U.S., but Liam Gallagher and Richard Ashcroft of The Verve are touring together, playing the same venue as Courtney Barnett, the Greek Theater here. I saw Noel Gallagher. I mentioned that I probably would have rather have seen Liam on this tour cycle. So I might have to go check this out, especially if Richard Ashcroft is playing more Verve hits than his solo material.
Yeah. So are Noel and Liam touring at the same time right now?
Yeah, they've kind of been, I mean, they released albums. Liam's album came out last October and Noel's came out, I think, in November. So they've kind of been, I think they even are a couple festivals that they might be on the bill together. Which, they're apparently on good terms again, although one look at Liam's Twitter account and you would wonder how that could possibly be true.
Yeah, I hope they keep that feud up just for Twitter and then the reunion.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that Liam's album was more successful than Noel's. So I think that gives a little fuel to the fire for both of them.
Yeah.
But I would like to check that show out as, you know, aging British rock dinosaurs going on the road together.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of aging British rock stars, Tom York announced some dates.
Nice.
Europe only. Radio kind of happening just before the Radiohead tour starts in the East Coast of the U.S. So our European listeners could look forward to hearing some very obscure blips and bleeps from Tom on stage.
I wonder if he's got new material then.
When did that last record come out now? It feels like it wasn't that long ago, but I guess it's been a minute.
It was before the last Radiohead record, right?
Yeah, really? Yeah, okay. I think, yeah, you're right. Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, right?
Yeah.
Yes, he did a very small show here late last year that nobody got into. So I can't really add too much to that conversation. But, he's a treasure. Although I'm really loving what Johnny Green was doing these days. We were talking about his soundtrack work a little bit on the last podcast.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So we were talking about that. You were saying you're listening to that quite a bit last week. What else have you been listening to lately, Nick?
Yeah. I checked out the Young Fathers album, Coco Sugar.
Oh, nice.
I really, really dig it. I thought your comparison to Massive Attack was like pretty on point, but not as down-tempo. I would agree with that. So yeah, that was really cool. And then I've been into this album from a band a friend of mine kind of told me to check out, and I realized that I'd heard a couple of their songs on a playlist from the blog Gorilla vs. Bear, a few months ago. But it's the Swedish band Smerz, S-M-E-R-Z.
Okay. It's
two women that play this kind of crazy electronica music, and it's really cool. It's really cool. Yeah, it was it's pretty unique, and yeah, it's not necessarily the kind of thing that everybody's going to be dancing around for, but really interesting.
So you're listening to a full-length record there, or just some singles?
Yeah, this is a full-length record called Have Fun. Released this year. I would encourage anybody that kind of digs obscure electronica, especially one that hails from Sweden, to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really surprised that the track I was referring to was No Harm, which is the second track on the album. And so once I started listening to that, I was like, oh, I know this band. And I realized it was from that playlist.
That's great.
Yeah. And you would like it because it's 8 songs, 24 minutes.
You know, I love brevity.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the Swedes too.
Yeah. They're putting out some great music.
Well, I once learned, and I mean, it seems obvious if you think about it, but Sweden is the third largest exporter of pop music, basically, in the country after the US and the UK. It's because they've mastered English so damn well.
Yeah. And I'm sure ABBA contributes to still a big portion of that.
ABBA definitely does. The Cardigans, I think, are one of the most underrated bands of the last 20 or so years, too. So,
no, they've got some. I mean, Licky Lee's
big. Licky Lee, US. Mike Snow.
Yeah. The Knife.
Knife, Fever Ray, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of great stuff out of Sweden.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of what I've been listening to, apart from the two albums we're going to talk about today. What about you?
This week, yeah, listening to those two records, really listening a bit to this album Historian by Lucy Dacus. I don't know if it's Dacus or – I'm going to say Dacus. She's on Matador. I really liked her first album, the little bit I listened to it, called No Burden. She's a Richmond, Virginia-based singer-songwriter. And this is it's just a really nice album. Great songwriting, kind of no frills, a little on the dark side. But the songs kind of unveil themselves, and all of them are kind of these mini epics. And I love that. She toured with a Car Seat Headrest and is really close with him. And her sound, like her actual sound, is very different from their sound, but her songwriting has, I think, some similarities in the way that, you know, they come across as kind of simple, but they're really complex and unfolded into these like epic songs. Mm-hmm. Going to go see her on Thursday. So I've been listening to that album a bit to prepare for the show. I'm really excited about that.
Very cool.
Still listening to that Teenage Wrist album we talked about a little bit this part of the show last week.
Yeah.
And then this record by Insecure Men has been really interesting. It's a member of Fat White Family and a member of another London band, Childhood. It's kind of this Velvet Underground, late 60s kind of psychedelic sound, but the lyrics are really strange and really dark and touch on things like pedophilia and criminality and just like the seedy side of humanity in a way that's pretty interesting.
Wow.
I saw it tagged as perv pop.
Perv pop.
So wow. If that sounds appealing to you, then maybe you have a problem.
Okay.
But it's a good record. I'm going to keep listening to it. It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
That's about. Oh, and there's John Grant.
Yeah.
One of my favorite kind of solo singer songwriters. He's put out a few great albums in the last few years. He's got a new project out called Creep Show, but that's the name of a band that he's formed with some other musicians, and I've only heard a few tracks from it, but it's really interesting and kind of like getting almost zero attention right now. So it's something that I want to keep on my back burner. I got to try to get into that record a little bit more.
Awesome.
First up, this album called Against All Logic, or I should say a project called Against All Logic. What is this? Who's Against All Logic?
So Against All Logic is an alias that Nicholas Jarre has used in the past and is using it to release this material. And he surprised released it without basically telling anyone. He just put it out there. And slowly but surely, these various music blogs started picking up on the fact that this was actually a Nicholas Jarre album under a different name. The album's called 2012 to 2017. I was doing some research on it, and it does seem that it has some old material and some unreleased material on it. Mm-hmm. So I'm led to believe that the material was compiled from 2012 to 2017, basically.
Well, Nicholas Jarre is a fascinating artist, I think. He's Chilean-American. Mm-hmm. His music kind of, like you said, he put out this under an alias probably because it to differentiate itself from his work under his solo name. But he's put out music as himself, kind of, I don't know if you would almost call him, in some ways he's kind of modern classical techno. He is a very unpredictable, you know, electronic artist. I think maybe got the most mainstream attention with his group Dark Side, which is a duo with guitarist Dave Harrington. And they put out only one record, but it really, you know, they had amazing live shows. It really garnered a lot of attention across the world, I think. And now he's got this project Against All Logic, which to me sounds like a house record, really. It's dancier. There's more disco to it. You never know what you're going to get with a Nicholas Jarre release.
Yeah, I think his releases under his Nicholas Jarre, I guess, moniker, Spaces Only Noise, Pomegranates, and Sirens, are all, you know, I think just from the titles, you kind of, they're definitely not house music the way you could describe this album. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a difference between. It's funny because I think about his releases on a spectrum from Spaces Only Noise to this one being the housiest of them all, mm-hmm. and kind of Dark Side fitting in the middle of that in a way.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, and his Nicholas Jarre stuff sitting more on the Spaces Only Noise side. For example, Sirens, I don't think any track really gets you going except for maybe a couple. Whereas this one, every track is kind of a dancey feeling track. Mm-hmm. I don't know if dancey feeling is a good description, but more of a house, your typical house album.
Yeah, I read somewhere they described the music on this record by saying the snare drum is in the right place on every song. Whereas, like, if you think about his work as Nicholas Jarre, the music is definitely not meant to make you dance. Maybe sometimes it will, but that's not the goal.
Yeah, I think what's interesting with his stuff is we've seen him twice, I think, together. We saw him through Dark Side and then as Nicholas Jarre. And in his Nicholas Jarre set, you do feel like dancing. But when you listen to the record, it's maybe more of an experimental kind of play.
He knows how to play to a festival or something like that. He's not exactly just playing his record straight.
Yeah, and his live show is amazing. I really recommend anybody to go check him out if you have a chance. I also want to point out that how prolific he is. I know we're not talking about the actual record right now, but just Nicholas Jarre is really prolific. He's from what I can tell, he's really started his career in 10 years ago. He's got three LPs under his name, the Dark Side Record, this one, a bunch of EPs, and also he scored the movie Deepan from Jacques Audiard, who won the Cannes Film Festival in 2015. So just an all-around really prolific artist.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that we saw Dark Side live like it was no big deal, but that was like one of the best shows I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think about it all the time, and I think we were both kind of blown away by that. And it was that almost was in like Pink Floyd territory.
Like, it was, yeah.
Guitar, kind of like psychedelic, epic, acid-drenched, freak-out, beautiful music.
Yeah, it was quite something, and I felt really lucky to catch him twice on that tour. And who knows if they'll ever come back.
And it was theatrical too, in a way that you don't really think of this kind of music as, because they, you know, there was a stage show. There was a large mirror that was shattered on stage.
Yeah,
it was really great.
Yeah.
So this album, I would, you know, in some ways, it almost reminds me of like Moby right before he broke through in a major way. And I'm not any kind of house music expert or savant, so this may seem way off base in some ways, but it's sample based. It is definitely within the genre of house music. It makes you dance. It keeps your mind occupied. I'm not really sure. It didn't fulfill me in a way that a lot of his earlier work does, but it's really fun in a way that, I mean, I wouldn't even describe Dark Side as fun. It's really, it's a fun record, and it's great. I think it's a good cooking album.
Oh yeah. I was going to go
there. You were going to go there. I had a feeling we hadn't had a good cooking album in a little while here. So we have to give this one our designation.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I don't really know if there's that much substance to it, mm-hmm. but I definitely enjoy it. And I mean, it also just shows you, as you mentioned, he's a prolific artist. It shows you, you know, really what this guy's capable of. If he's just, you know, if he can do something like this pretty well, like he does it, and then make these kind of avant classical, metaphorical, interesting compositions as himself, and then he's got the, you know, the psychedelic rockier side with Dark Side. If they ever get back together again, you almost have to evaluate him as an artist when he brings you something new that you haven't really heard from him.
What you said, I think I understand the fulfillment part. I think to me, this was I'm so pleased with this album, and pleased is a weak term, but what I mean by that is that it felt almost like an exercise in style, and like he nailed it, you know. It's like, mm-hmm. Look what I can do. And I wouldn't expect that from, you know, if he said, I'm releasing a new album in 2018, this is not what I would expect. And, you know,
definitely not.
So much funk and soul samples that are just so good. But yet it's a house album that the reason I like it so much is that it's definitely a Nicholas Jaar house album. Like, some of the songs just end and another one starts. And there's just these, you know, the first song is called This Old House Is All I Have. And it starts with, it's like, to me, the most Dark Side song on the album. It has this kind of guitar groove, and it's got these, I don't know how to call them, these explosions of sounds, almost like this atmospheric cinematographic display of sound that he uses in a lot of his music and was really present in Dark Side. So, and then he introduced this really cool sample, and it just like makes it a completely different sound for Nicholas Jaar. And that sets the tone to me for the whole album. And you compare it to Moby, I was actually thinking, especially like the beginning of the album, reminds me of something that could have been off of Homework or Discovery. Like it's old sample-based, old drum machines from like a, some of it feels like a house album from 1995. But at the same time, he's using everything we kind of know from him to make it his own. So it feels contemporary still. So I've listened to this album so much. Part of it is, as you might have heard if you followed this podcast for the short 10 weeks it's been on, or however many weeks we've been on, that when I travel, I tend to download an album onto my phone, and then I realize I'm stuck with that music for the rest of the trip. So I downloaded this one, and for my 2 weeks in Europe last month, that's, I listened to a lot of this.
Well, I actually wanted to talk to you about that. So when you travel and these 2 weeks, when are you mostly listening to music? Is it when you're on the airplane?
Yeah.
So like, to me, that makes a lot of sense, because I don't know. I travel a lot. We're on planes a lot. There's certain kinds of music that I like to listen to on a plane. My number one plane band is Slow Dive, but I go for like droney, like pretty psychedelic music that doesn't rock too hard, basically, because I might be trying to sleep usually if I'm listening to music. And like when you listen to this album on a plane, what is your goal? Or are you just listening to it because we're going to review it on the podcast and it's on your phone? Or is there like, does the music do something to you? Does it have an intended purpose?
So I didn't listen to it because we were going to review it, because I think I started listening to it before we even discussed it and before I insisted on reviewing it. But I thought if this is a Nicholas Jaar release, it's going to be perfect for a plane ride. So back to your Slow Dive comment, I think it just ticked a box for me. Like, I'm going to be in the air for 9 hours. I need to listen to it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to kind of put me in the kind of mood I want to while I'm on this plane. However, part of the reason I listened to it so much is my screen on my plane didn't work. So I didn't get to watch anything.
Okay.
So I listened to this album while reading obsessively. And it's a great album to listen to while you're reading a book, because it's not very distracting. But I will say that 5 or 6 times during the first listen, I stopped reading and I looked up the name of the song because I liked it so much. So that happened with the first 3 songs. It happened with the 7th song called City Fade, which is my favorite song on the album. And it happened with Flash in the Pan, you know? So to me, like, just that, the fact that I stopped what I was doing to look up what the heck am I listening to, was a good sign. And then I just kept listening, and no pun intended, but it got me hooked. Wandering the streets of a European capital with listening to this was also a fantastic experience. So to me, like, my love for this album comes not comes as much from the quality of the songs as it is from the experience I had listening to it.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting what you said. Like, I'm going to go on this flight. I'm going to be in the air for 9 hours. There's a new Nicholas Jaar record, so that seems like perfect for the trip, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe you put this on, and maybe it sounds like it was perfect for you, but it's like, it's definitely more up-tempo. Mm-hmm. It's more like, it's more of a dance record than if I just didn't know anything about it and I put on a new Nicholas Jaar record. You know, I would expect to be like more droned out. I would expect it to be slower. And that's probably why he put it out under a different moniker too, with the Against All Logic name. Yeah. I guess, because it really doesn't have that much. I mean, you can tell that it's his music, but it doesn't have that much in common with Space Is Only Noise or Sirens, like these records that have really given him a name worldwide.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's got more in common with Dark Side than any of his solo stuff, to be honest. And I think because I always thought Dark Side was very bluesy. And this is more, I guess, funk soul, but it kind of fits in that. It's definitely not experimental the way his solo stuff is. So I would bucket it more towards that. I agree that I didn't expect it to be as dancey as it is, but for some reason, I was totally down for the ride, and I didn't actually sleep on the plane, so maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I love one thing I love about music is how it can be so circumstantial. We talk about cooking records, talking about plane records. You're talking about wandering around European capitals or capitals, beautiful European cities, and listening to music, and there's something that fits every mood. And I think more than anything, you know, I think this is a good album. Is it an album? Is it a collection of songs? You know, he's been very coy with, there hasn't been much actual information about this release at all, but it shows you the depth of Nicholas Jaar's talent, and that anything that he puts out is at least something to check out. You know, it's going to be worth your time.
I agree. I think, yeah, definitely worth your time, every one of his releases. But, you know, on the cooking record side, I've cooked a lot to this record and, yeah, it's up there. It's definitely one of my favorite albums of the year. I don't know if it's an album, but it's definitely one of my favorite releases so far. I am really into this album.
Well, at the end of the year, we're going to have to break down our top cooking albums of the year, see where this one ranks. Sounds like it's going to be pretty high, but we'll have to look forward to that. Let's move on.
Yep.
Second album this week, debut album from the UK band The Magic Gang. This is a self-titled record coming out on Warner. Was this band on your radar at all before we checked them out for this week?
No, not at all. I think I insisted on Nicholas Jaar, and you you said, well, then I get to say The Magic Gang.
Yeah, this band has been putting out singles for a few years and getting quite a bit of attention for them, at least on the other side of the pond. I was pretty excited to check out the full length when it came out. And to me, it really doesn't disappoint at all. This is kind of 60s, sort of 60s inspired guitar based pop album, a very young band. Not a lot to distinguish themselves, you know, in terms of narrative or visually, but really, really good songwriting and kind of vocals. Like, to me, it reminds me, the first thing I thought of was like early Weezer. Mm. Listening to this record, a little bit of, you know, Beach Boys by way of Weezer, Brian Wilson by way of Rivers Cuomo. Mm. And, you know, I have to say, I like every single song on this album a lot.
All right.
What do you think?
I was very pleasantly surprised by this album. I found it interesting that we reviewed this after the Gengar review, because my feelings about Gengar being, I was a little disappointed in the Gengar album, I think, as, at least I came across that way. And this one, I was very pleasantly surprised, and I just found it so positive, like such a fun album to listen to. Like it just, I don't know, I had such a good time listening to this. I think the part of it is that, to your point, every song is just solid. Like there's, there's not a song I want to skip. I don't skip any songs when I listen to it. And that's a testament to how I think the collection of songs they put on this album is really good. It's funny you said Weezer. I was thinking it reminds me a little bit of Surfer Blood in a way.
I was going to say that too, especially that debut album. I thought about it a lot while listening to this. I've been listening to this album nonstop this week, and I've thought about Surfer Blood all the time. I haven't gone back and actually listened to that first Surfer Blood album again. Mm-hmm. But I remembered those songs, you know, while listening to this album.
Yeah, I really like it. I didn't know much about the band. I read a little bit of it. It seems like they're pretty prolific, not only in their own band, but in other bands. They just play in, a bunch of bands from what the interviews I read. But they seem to come together really well as a unit here. And I think this would be such a fun live show to go to if this was the set list. Mm-hmm. And I just think, like, it'd just be really fun. And it really makes me happy to see so many good British guitar rock bands. It feels like there's definitely a movement around guitar rock in the UK right now. And
I was going to bring up the exact same thing today with you, that there's something going on. And I thought about Shame a bit while listening to this album. I mean, these are both debut records. They're both highly anticipated, and they're so different.
Oh, but, sure.
I mean, I wonder if that has to do with the times we're living in now. Like, in 1995, you could take Oasis, Blur, Suede, Pulp, all these supergrass, all these bands, and lump them together as Britpop, and nobody's been able to create a successful narrative around these bands now. And I think because with the internet and with the culture we live in, everything, people are so well educated, and these disparate things can't really be lumped together anymore. So it might be harder to sell to an international audience if you're trying to, you know, sell this big scene. But I thought about Shame as Oasis and this band, The Magic Gang, as Blur in a way. And they do, they have a lot of similarities to Blur too, I think. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Surfer Blood. The other band I was going to bring up, one of my favorite bands of all time, Teenage Fan Club. Mm-hmm. It's kind of power pop with a little bit of an edge to them. I mean, I think definitely of all these young bands that we've talked about from the UK on this podcast so far, besides Shame, they have the most commercial potential.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that.
Any of these songs in this album could be a single.
Exactly.
It was hard for me. I know that a lot of these songs have been released already as singles, so it almost is a kind of greatest hits compilation, but it would be hard pressed to listen to the album front to back and tell someone what the singles on it are.
Yeah, it's also, you know, I think it's also maybe because of that, it's a little hard to, I was wrestling a little bit with how I felt about it, but not in the same way that how I was wrestling to get a grip on Gengar. It's more that I knew I liked it, but it was tough for me to tell you exactly why did I like it so much. But the truth is that every song is just good, and they kind of fit together, and it's just really fun to listen to.
I know exactly what you're saying. Like, I had a similar relationship with it at first. I was like, these are good songs, but like, this is like another, you know, white guitar band. Why should I care? You know, there wasn't anything like sexy about it. There wasn't a narrative hooked to the band. They're just good songs. Mm-hmm. But I found myself like humming these songs when I'm not listening to the album all the time. And I really like that Gengar album from last week, but in a way that I wasn't with that album, yeah. You know, like these are just songs that are not leaving my head.
Yeah. And I think like what I came to the realization is that I have fun listening to this album, and it doesn't really matter that I can't really put my finger on why I have fun with it, as long as I have fun. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense? So to me, like, instead of trying to figure out what it is specifically about this album that I love, I just like to say, I like all of these songs. I think they play really well in the order they're given. And I don't skip any of them, and it's just pure fun to me.
Yeah, I noticed that neither you or I are like talking about specific tracks off this album, because it's hard for me to really. I mean, I know there's like a couple that I like maybe a little more than others, but the quality is really strong throughout the whole thing. If any of these references that we're talking about sound appealing, or if you like, you know, guitar, pop music at all, then I think there's no one that's not going to enjoy this.
Yeah, I agree. I also thought about another album that gave me a similar feeling when it came out a few years ago, was Michael Cronin's first album. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is just great guitar songs, and they're just great one after the other. And I had a similar feeling where I couldn't really pinpoint why I liked it so much. And this is very similar to me. Told a joke I shouldn't have made. Now you're telling me you're never gonna come back again. Bye-bye, and won't you come out? Instead you swim around. Bye-bye, and won't you come out?
I mean, there's really not that much to say about this record, but it's like they have no presence in the States yet. I don't think they've played a show over here. I gotta think that it's happening pretty soon, based on the fact that they're on a major label and the album is as strong as it is. But I think everybody's gonna like this one. So I can't believe we've been doing this podcast now for only a few months, and we've been consistently talking about really good records, and most of them coming from young bands in the UK.
Yeah. Apart from Franz Ferdinand.
I said young bands in the UK.
We're going to be known as the people as the guy who doesn't like Franz Ferdinand.
I mean, that's not the worst corner to be sitting on. It's not the worst island to float your yacht to, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Nick, another week, two more great records. What's been going on? There's some rumblings in the Juice Box universe. I heard something about we might have some more social media accounts so that they can be used against us in the next election.
Oh, yeah. Folks, we've got a Twitter account. We've got an Instagram account.
Oh, my God.
Let's see. So Twitter, it's Juicebox Music is the handle.
Juicebox Music, Twitter, follow it. Retweet it.
Follow. I don't know. Actually, it's not Juicebox Music. It's Juicebox Pod.
Okay, forget scratch. Juicebox Pod, follow it. Retweet it.
Exactly.
Love it.
And our Instagram handle is Juicebox Music Pod. What are we going to do with that? We still don't know.
No, we're going to show. We're going to update you with the shows we're going to, the records we're listening to.
Maybe some nice stories. On Twitter, we'll be announcing.
I saw Wolf Alice last night. I could have been updating stories from that, but the account was created one day too late. You know what I mean? I can't be showing you those hashtag TBTs just yet.
Well, the next show you're going to.
Many to come.
But anyway, so forget everything you just heard about these accounts. Just follow our Twitter account, which is Juicebox Pod. Follow our Instagram account, which is Juicebox Music Pod. I hope this isn't too confusing. And there's more to come.
I just want to give a shout out to my Uber driver from Park City, Utah to Salt Lake City, Utah, yesterday morning, Monday morning. You were cool. We talked about music. You're really excited for David Byrne's new tour. And I just want to say, I told you about the podcast. If you're listening to it right now, I want to give you a shout out. You're doing some great work with Rehab. And yeah. Awesome. See if you listen to the end of this podcast.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So yeah, follow us on the social media. Also, don't forget to subscribe and to rate us on iTunes. This means a lot. Helps us get more people to listen to the show. Helps us improve the quality of the show, because the more people listen, the more they'll tell us we suck.
Exactly.
So, please just do that.
And now that we got all the kind of housekeeping out of the way, we'll be back soon with another great episode. There's too much music coming out. It's hard for us to narrow it down with what we want to review. So maybe if you start following us on Twitter, you can give us suggestions that way. We'd love some help in deciding like what you guys want to hear us talk about.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
And we're going to be sending Nick to Stagecoach Festival next month, headlined by Florida Georgia Line, Keith Urban, and on Sunday night, Garth Brooks. His press credentials are coming through for that, so we're really looking forward to that.
You know, I would go if I got a free ticket, because I would drink just insane amounts of Bud Light for the whole weekend.
The most beer drank. At any festival in the country, at least. I don't know. I don't think Americans can match other countries when it comes to booze consumption, but
yeah, for sure.
That's the one.
All right.
All right. We should probably end this podcast. It's late at night. Thank you guys. We'll talk to you later.
All right. See you, man.